You have queued up the Roulette Tapes, a program of adventurous music and conversation recorded at the New York City Concert Hall, Roulette. You can hear thousands of concert recordings from Roulette's past and present and find news of upcoming events celebrating innovation and imagination at roulette.org. Aren't you curious?
In this edition of The Roulette Tapes, we explore the work of Brandon Lopez, bassist, composer, improviser, and dedicated collaborator in solo, duo, and ensemble works recorded at Roulette alongside the artist's commentary on technique, process, influences, and some surprising twists and turns. These recordings have been preserved as part of Roulette's Concert Archive Project. And now, Brandon Lopez.
My name is Brandon Lopez. I'm a bassist, I'm a musician, and a whole mess of other things. So I was born in Passaic, New Jersey, which is like it's a really shitty little town right outside of New York City. I mean, you could basically spit at Manhattan. And my parents moved into a cemetery. My father runs a cemetery in Fort Lee, New Jersey. And then we ended up moving out west. But my earliest memories were playing in the cemetery. I come from, not only from grave diggers, but my mother's side of the family is they're generations of professional musicians. My great-great-uncle, Jose Armengol Diaz, he was like on a bunch of kind of iconic recordings with that came from Puerto Rico and New York. My great-uncle Hector Zeno was really involved in like the New Yorican scene here in New York City. He started this band called Típica Novel. He was part of this kind of pre-Fania thing where, you know, there was like these Puerto Ricans basically doing Cuban music and mixing it with American popular music, and he won a Grammy. His daughter, Sandy, was in the band Exposé, which was like this Latin freestyle group in the 80s that had like a few hits. It's a famous, like, you know, like mafia band, they called it. So I grew up in like this, with this precedent being there that you could actually be a professional musician, which is completely insane. But I kind of resisted music. I didn't really like performance. I didn't like being a performer. You know, that always made me feel very uncomfortable. And then I got a D in third grade in music because I melted my recorder. It was like the, you know, those like little plastic recorders. Totally fucked up. Got a D and I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna do music. I don't want to even deal with music. I put a bad taste in my mouth. So I was just doing visual art as a kid constantly. I was always making things. And eventually I had a friend who had a guitar and he showed me some things on the guitar and I was hooked. My parents got me a guitar and I just didn't stop playing. I also had this aunt, my dad's sister, she's a pretty funny woman, but she would go to the city all the time and go to these record stores in the West Village and come back with a bunch of records for me. So I mean, I would have like, you know, like a Mingus's Al-Um and you know, like a box set of Lightning and Hopkins, and you know, just all this. She would just bring all this music, and I'm not even sure if she was really hip to all this shit. She also like took me into the city to see music. I mean, some of the first shows I went to were, you know, I saw Ray Barretto like probably about 6 months to a year before he died, which I mean that's a big thing because, you know, I'm Puerto Rican, you know, Ray Barretto is. But I remember seeing him on like a Wednesday night for like my birthday as like a 12 or 13 year old and being completely freaked out by the musicianship, and that shit just got me hooked. I remember really liking Mingus, and also like fusion era shit, you know, just I was into guitar, the pyrotechnics of guitar, like that kind of like, you know, like any 13 year old, you know, would be into. Anyway, I ended up studying kind of like with this Tristana White guitar player in Jersey. Because in a sense, it was kind of very traditional. He's an older guy, and he was like a working musician, right? He was like this, like, you know, restaurant guitar player who happened to be really into, you know, the Tristana thing. I ended up going to college. I went to Berklee College of Music. I hated it. I dropped out and switched to double bass. And then I applied to go to New England Conservatory. I got in, playing double bass, and I hated it. I didn't show up. I just practiced and eventually just dropped out. You know, it's like places like New England Conservatory, for they give you access to a lot of information. Like in their archives, I mean, Cecil Taylor went to school there. You know, I didn't like the conservatory experience. And then I just ended up shitting around in New Jersey, working for my father, digging graves. Somehow I had went to go see a show at Winter Jazz Festival, which was going on, and it was sold out. I couldn't get tickets, and I drove in from Jersey with a friend of mine, and we ended up at this bar on Sullivan Street. It's empty. You're the only three people inside the bar. It was me, my friend, and the bartender. So of course we're talking, and it turns out he went to the New School. He was a jazz guitarist, and you know, we started talking about music, and he's like, well, actually, we need somebody to book Wednesday nights here at this shitty little bar. And I ended up doing that for about a year and a half, 2 years. So that kind of, it was interesting how it kind of just worked out, where I started running these shows, and I started playing every week at these shows, because I felt like I needed to, you know, expose myself to actually making shit in front of people. I got involved in, you know, playing in like the more indie rock scene and the experimental music scene. I was running for 4 years. I was running a show series at Manhattan Inn, which was like another shitty dive bar, but this time it was in Greenpoint. And there, I just, you know, throughout that time of figuring out places to play and ways to play, I developed the way that I play now. You know, the development of what I do is it's not very cleanly. There's so many influences. Eventually, you know, after all this shit, people started taking notice, I guess. I mean, I ended up here. I got the Van Leer Fellowship here, which, you know, gave me a lot of time and to develop something which saved my life. I mean, you know, Roulette has, in a lot of ways. It really saved my life. And I was also able to buy this really fucking amazing double bass that it was Teddy Kotick's bass. I guess. Teddy Kotick was on the first... the bass was on the first Bill Evans Trio record. It was on this record, Swedish Schnapps, Charlie Parker record with Miles Davis, an Art Blakey record. I mean, it's just a great instrument. in 2018, I did a duet with duet show here at Roulette with Steve Bajkowski, who's a saxophonist from Buffalo and a programmer at I guess it's one of the oldest arts nonprofits in the nation, Hall Walls, which Tony Conrad, I guess, famously started. Steve is one of the most unique saxophone players I think I've encountered. I like people who have a tendency to denature their instrument, meaning that like taking it out of its like, you know, supposedly natural context. And Steve prepares the saxophone in a very specific way, and he plays the saxophone in an extremely specific way. It's really sympathetic to the way that I like to approach playing the double bass, which is less about harmony and melody than it is like to timbre and sound. Another important aspect to the way that I like to approach music as of now, or really, and not just music, but pretty much everything. I mean, I prefer to collaborate. And ultimately, you know, I think, you know, most music that comes from jazz or improvisation does the same thing. It's like we have a tendency to think in these kind of singular figures like John Coltrane or Cecil Taylor. But, you know, it's the people around them that helped build these things. Sun Burns Out Your Eyes, I just like that name. Like, that was the name of the concert. Isn't necessarily the name of this particular band. But this particular concert, I guess I just wanted to see, because I had a working trio with Gerald and Steve, Gerald Cleaver and Steve Bajkowski. And I wanted to see what would happen if I would add an electronics, Cecilia. Cecilia has an extremely particular way of treating synthesizers that kind of runs against what me and Steve and Gerald kind of created together. So I wanted to see what would happen. One thing I like to think about is when something becomes comfortable, is how to force it into something, to force the sound or aesthetic into something, and just into uncomfortable territory. So Marina Kipperstein and Gabby Flukemogel on violins. This was kind of like an exercise in implying a specific concept over 40 minutes. You know, there was three specific segments and development of these specific segments. I wanted to find a way of or at least experiment with like a way of composing that gives a lot of agency to the players themselves, but at the same time has kind of a predetermined form, long form. I mean, it's a piece for improvisers, but there's a specific gesture that we're dealing with up front. Before 2018, I had a band that was doing a lot of my compositions, and there was a certain point where I just felt like I just hadn't developed my own voice enough. I think I just kind of needed to, you know, put my own compositional shit on the back burner for a while in order to actually develop my way or my language or develop a language that feels like mine. Okay, so it was 2018. I did a concert with Nate Woolley, Michael Foster, and Ben Bennett, and I thought it was a really interesting exploration in taking a somewhat traditional quartet, jazz quartet instrumentation, and denaturing that process. So I mean, it ended up being more timbre and sound and process than typical things versus more traditional like rhythmic or harmonic and melodic development. Thank you. So I did a solo concert in May of this past year. Yeah, I wanted to see how long I could play solo for, so I gave myself an hour. But yeah, I mean, the title was Vile, Repeating, 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 Repeating. I mean, it's not even meant to be read. Like, I like this idea of taking a small word and repeating it over and over and over and over and over again, because it ultimately turns into something else. You know, you could see vile evil in there or something like that, but if you actually just kind of zoom out, it just becomes like a repeated texture. Solo bass concert was in celebration of a solo bass record entitled the same name. I just wanted to see how much I could push myself to stick with certain ideas over an hour. There's a lot of, percussive things happening. And I had been studying Afro-Cuban percussion. The rumba complex is done on boxes. Point in Cuba where they outlawed drums, so they started playing on wooden boxes. And I thought that was interesting, and I started, utilizing these techniques that I had been, learning on the double bass, which happens to be a really resonant box. It was kind of been a joy to find, like, all these different tones and resonances through just kind of, not playing the bass in a traditional manner. Studying, the Afro-Cuban percussion, I mean, a lot of players nowadays, there's a lot of independence, rhythmic independence, and polyrhythmic independence. I wanted to see how independent my two hands and these two figures, or these multiple figures, can be. I mean, that's a big part of the way that I approach the bass too, is I like counterpoint, and not in the sense of harmony, but counterpoint in the sense of processes and sounds. So how can I make an instrument like the double bass, which is meant to be, basically the carpet behind the cellos in an orchestra, how do I make that sound like, four people doing work?
Compositions, improvisations, collaborative works, and remarks from the bass player Brandon Lopez. We heard excerpts from a number of projects commissioned by Roulette since 2018. You can hear the full concert recordings preserved at roulette.org/archive. This program is made possible in part with support from the National Endowment for the Arts. This is David Weinstein at the desk. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to The Roulette Tapes, a program of adventurous music and conversation. This series is produced by Roulette Intermedium. You can find thousands of concert recordings from Roulette's archives and news of upcoming events at roulette.org.